Warm greetings to anyone who is listening to this recording, wherever you may be, whatever time it may be. My name is Rob Christie. I've been involved in the personal growth and transformation arena for decades. And I want to briefly share an experience I had back in 1988. I was seeing a therapist, but I guess his name isn't important. And I asked him, could we make a list of all of the different reasons that people come to see him? And he obliged me. So here's the list. Money and career, health and fitness, relationships and sex, and you might say major questions of life, our relationship to God, metaphysics, how the world actually operates. And to digress from the list for a moment, during my journey, I've had the occasion to work with many great teachers, and I'm with one of them this morning, my dear friend Jim Hamilton. And in recent weeks, Jim and I have covered the first six topics on the list that I just shared with you. And today we're going to cover the last. If any of those first six items on the list, money and career, health and fitness, relationships and sex, hit your hot button, or to state it differently, if you have a challenge in one of those arenas, get in touch with Jim. He can put you, he can show you how to access the material that we covered on those subjects. And as I say, today we'll cover the last. And what I found interesting as I've gone through these conversations with Jim is, let's say you go to your medical doctor and you have something that's troubling you. Their typical pattern is they make a diagnosis and then there's a prescription for some sort of treatment. And those treatments tend to vary depending on what you present. And the interesting thing that I've found with Jim is that regardless of the presenting difficulty, at the end of the day, the solution or the next step is always the same. And we'll cover that for you today. Jim, take it away.
Rob, great to be here. Great to be in conversation with you, for which everybody gets to follow along. I think your remark's interesting because there is only one solution. There is one. First off, anybody can describe problems, and all problems ultimately have the same underlying cause, and it's being out of our connection with source. That's not a religious remark, because when I say source, I'm saying innate intelligence, I'm saying God, I'm saying truth, divinity, the divine, on. But there's an order that everything shares. Ask the trees or the bumblebees. There's an order that everything shares, and when the humans are out of sync with that, we have errors or ills or discomforts or dysfunction or all the different kinds of maladies that humanity deals with. And when we're in sync with our connection with source, all of that fades, because there's an order that everything shares, and we learn how to align with it. When we become true to ourselves, we move into a different kind of a world. And that's the exploration. Here we are in 2023. The old is over. Old is about polarity. Old is about going to the doctor and saying, I've got a toothache. Or old is going to the doctor and say, I've got this problem, that problem. What's the answer? Problem, solution. That's old. Polarity is old. And what we just need to do is become what's true. And so in this last series, you've thrown out different concepts, money and sex and career and this and that. And ultimately, the solution is always the same. It's about enabling our connection with source. And as we do so, our worlds change and what used to be our problems fade away.
Well, I want to underscore a couple of things for those that are listening. I want to guarantee you that you have not found your way to a website where you are being invited to join a cult, change your religious beliefs. Neither of the foregoing. Instead, what we have to share is proven technologies that, regardless of what you feel your challenge might be, can help you make significant progress along those lines. So Jim is a teacher who shares proven concepts and proven solutions. Not a guru, not the head of a cult or a religion. Although, you know, we have nothing disparaging to say about religion. How does your work support people who are interested in learning more about metaphysics? You know, how the world really operates if you study the matter.
Well, you know, what we're talking about here is actually a mechanical understanding of how things work. I've been having a couple conversations lately over the last month, and humans, we're not whole on our own. And actually, like everything else in nature, we plug into a bigger scale of order, what you might call a bigger type of governance. So God is really more a type of order that everything shares. It's God is not a two-legged or in a rocking chair or a beard or even a man shape. It's an order that everything shares. Where that order comes from, that's a little bit different. But I'll give you an example. Humans tend to congregate under the governance of the government. Now, curiously, the government actually has authority over artificial entities because government only has authority over what it creates. So the humans inadvertently line up with the government, and whatever the government says is what the humans do. And they actually look to the government itself, an artificial entity, a corporation, whatever you want to say. They look to it for authority and leadership. And it's a very false suggestion of governance or order or authority or leadership. It's great for artificial entities because they have no sense. An artificial entity has no nervous system, therefore is incapable of knowing the difference between right and wrong. A government is incapable of knowing the difference between right and wrong. It takes a nervous system. It takes your connection with source. It takes lining up with what's true, for which then you have an internal mechanism that tells you the difference between right and wrong. In fact, people listening to this can go, turn it off. Or people can continue to listen or even tune in and start paying more attention. And so human beings are not intact on their own, but we are living, and there's an order that all living things share. Again, some people call it God. I prefer the term innate intelligence source. And so when we come to understand this mechanical understanding of our nature, suddenly the whole thing opens up. And of course, there's no expense to learning how to listen to your gut, or learning how to listen to intuition, or watching the mind kind of compete with intuition. And so this mechanical understanding is the, so again, it's not a religion, it's not even a belief system. It's a trial and error discovery about your very nature. And that's really what the conversation ultimately is, understanding our very nature, for which something bigger than us is part of us, or we are part of that.
Jim, you and I have been talking, we've been having these conversations for months. And I'm a slow learner, but I do learn. I finally understand your statement, I prefer the word source to the word God, because I think for most of us, God is a loaded word. You know, it's associated with the religious beliefs we were exposed to as children, the religious beliefs we may, carry with us even today. And that's not what you're talking about.
That's right. There's a movie. In fact, the hair's standing up with my arm as I go to tell the story. There's a movie, Krishna Das. There's the hair standing straight up here. Krishna Das is a musician. He was actually part of Blue Oyster Cult, a rock band a long time ago. And as a young kid, he went to India and ended up discovering his guru and became... He actually introduced chanting to the Western world, and I love chanting. It's very special. Even the Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Rama, however all that goes. And chanting generally is Sanskrit, so all the words are words that are associated with God or innate intelligence. But Krishna Das, so it's a DVD. I wish I could tell you what it's called, and I'll put it up. In fact, I need to make a copy of it for somebody. I don't think it's around right this second. And because he's not actually a wordsmith, now I'm a wordsmith because I write all the time. And so I've come to describe presence and these kinds of things. I've had this incredible life of so many years of meditation and then core resonance, which is a variation on neurofeedback. And I've come to access presence, but I've come up with all of my own terminology. And that's why God isn't enough. So innate intelligence is a much better descriptive, or source, or truth, or divinity, or coherence is actually a great term. My point is that Krishna Das, in describing this incredible experience he's had and the amount of influence he's had on so many other people, he uses the old jargon of Hindi and all of that India. And he talks about love, and he talks about love, and he talks about love. But it's a term that's so overused, and I'm not making it wrong, but we need to come to a better, we need to learn how to use different terminology. And so the shortcoming of Krishna Das' presentation in this film, which is really very nice, and maybe it's called One Pilgrim Heart, I'm not sure, I'll have to put it up. But he reverts back to the language that they've been using for 1,000 years, and it's just missing something. We need to come up with new terms for describing this mechanism of connection with source. And if anything makes me different, it's that I have come up with my own terminology. And so it's curious, innate intelligence, source, God, and I do use them interchangeably. But I prefer to make the suggestion there's a governance out there. Humans are not intact or whole on their own. We need to plug into what's true. And that's kind of my pitch, you might say.
Well, I majored in English as English creative writing as an undergraduate. I've spent a lot of time thinking about language over the years. And for our audience, I can't overemphasize the importance of language in discovering what's true, engaging with something that you haven't had a prior experience with. So, I applaud Jim for coming up with languaging that enables him to lead people. Well, I shouldn't say lead people, point people in the direction of the ineffable, point people in the direction of source. Brief digression. My favorite Sanskrit story. If your native language is English, which it probably is if you're listening to this, we've got one word for love. I believe Italian has three. Sanskrit had 40. That absolutely blows me away. You know, I feel sad that it's a dead language. Nobody speaks it anymore. But imagine living in a culture that valued love so highly that they identified 40 different nuances of that.
And by the way, what is love but non-resistance?
Yeah.
Loving is non-resistance. Loving is allowing. When you are loving, you're in a state of allowing. And so even the concept of love is so easily misconstrued. And by the way, America has, I think, seven versions. Like Benjamin Franklin talked about, I don't remember what, but Philadelphia comes from Phila, which is one of the expressions of love. Eros is another one. And I don't remember, there's like seven of them. So there is a breakdown in the English language of love being seven very variants of love, maybe, because Eros is one of those. I assume that's more of a sexual thing, but so loving or unconditional love, by the way, unconditional love is, in my terminology, no resistance to your maker. So it's all a love and allowing are the same thing. But if you want to talk about love, why don't you just talk about allowing? Why don't you use something that's a modern vernacular and use terms that makes sense? And frankly, love is so, I started to say outdated. It's so overused that it's lost its crispness as a term. We're allowing and non-resistance kind of more define what we're talking about.
What's the opposite of allowing?
Resistance. Simple as that. Rigidity, doubt, fear, all the lower octaves of the map of consciousness. On the map of consciousness, you have, you know, anger, fear, resentment, anxiety, rage, whatever, up through pride. Those are all variants of resistance and overload and shut down. And then you move to courage, and courage is the breakpoint. And from courage, you start moving into variants of allowing that start as reason, for example, or neutrality. That's the beginning states of allowing. And then you move up the map. See, actually, I have the map here. I'm getting smart enough to keep this around. What do we got? Neutrality, willingness, acceptance, reason, love, joy, peace, enlightenment. And what that is you, the further you get away from resistance and overload, the more you move into acceptance and allowing. And curiously, the more you move into acceptance and allowing, the more you naturally blend with source. And blended with source, so that's the game. That's the secret. It's a mechanical understanding. Allowing is how you get there. They've always said love. They've always said love. They've always said love. Well, nobody knows what the hell love means, except we think it has something to do with the last girlfriend. Or I'm not going to get in, you know, I'm not going to try to make a wreck out of the word love, but you know, acceptance is a much better understanding. Non-resistance. So unconditional love, no resistance to your maker. Unconditional love is actually a technology, in my opinion. I just jumped the subject. I apologize.
I know we've covered it before, but I want you to share with our listeners today a little bit more about the map of consciousness. It's a terrific tool, and you knew the author personally, and heard it right from the horse's mouth, so to speak.
Well, I was in the proximity of Dr. David Hawkins when I was writing Visionaries Thrive in All Times. And he and I did used to communicate by fax machine. And my offer to him was, I used to say, hey, I'll move boxes of books around for you. So I didn't have a really scholarly, position with him. I was more offering to run people from the airport in Scottsdale up to Sedona, because at that particular time I was in Scottsdale writing Visionaries Thrive in All Times. That's where the bulk of it was written. And somehow we came to be in touch. And I have been to his house on Christmas, and I've knocked on his door for and asking for a calibration on something in particular. I didn't attend that many of his talks. A lot of people they that just became their thing. They every time he had events, they would show up en masse. And what I did find was that I've been to his events that were so busy that you'd arrive and you'd only be able to get your head in the door. But sometimes he would sit there and he'd just cackle to himself and just kind of talk to himself the whole first half. And you'd break for lunch and half the people would leave, or the first big break, and then you could get inside and maybe he would kick in and maybe he wouldn't. And so the videos were, all of his stuff was recorded. And so the best stuff was recorded. And that was kind of the best way to see him. But I did used to see him at live events.
The thing that impressed me about what you shared with me is, everybody on the path wants to believe that they're capable of, well, ascension is a word that's, used very commonly in this day and age. But the beauty of the map of consciousness is, it gets it down to specific values associated with specific words and specific states that are, anybody with a normal IQ on up can understand.
So the conversation kind of started, wordsmithing and your backdrop in English and using terminology and words. And so one of the things the Map of Consciousness has done so very successfully is introduce a linear understanding of love, you might say, because I describe love as acceptance. And so what this scale, the Map of Consciousness is more acceptance, more acceptance, more acceptance, more acceptance. Less resistance, more acceptance, and he's broken that down into gradients and terminology, and he's described something really big with the map of consciousness. Now, I use the map a little bit differently than it's traditionally been used. It's all right there, but obviously the lower end of the scale is rigidity and resistance and reaction and overload. It's because when you're in depression, that's massive overload. That is overload to the point you can't do anything, or you can barely do things. And so one of the points is that from let's see, when you're in grief or apathy, let's say, which is kind of like a hopeless state, grief or anger is a step better. And so you work out of that absolute rigidity of being frozen internally. So, because when people are in depression, their energy just goes around in a circle. None of it gets out. Their ability to act and respond and be in acceptance of things is zero, because allowing takes a type of brain processing. So when somebody brings you a new idea, if you're in overload, your ability to hear the new ideas is virtually zero. That's the biggest problem all of us run into. We all have ideas for others. Some of us are more effective and efficient at those kinds of things. But when somebody's in overload, their ability to take on something new is really minimal. And so their ability at allowing is really minimal. And so, courage is an important step on that. And some people, I won't say people don't get there, but sometimes people need help and maybe to understand the mechanical understanding of what's really going on. When we're not in our connection with source or not working on our connection with source, we don't really have much of a hint.
Hello, hello, hello to anyone listening. Wherever you may be, whatever your circumstances may be, I'm Rob Christie. I've been involved in growth and transformation for decades. And during that long and wonderful journey, I've had the privilege of encountering many great teachers. I'm with one of them this morning, my dear friend, Jim Hamilton. Jim's written 5 books, and more importantly, come up with several technologies that have been proven to be of value to any person interested in making meaningful change in his or her life. And Jim, I'd like to focus on one of those technologies, if we could. And that's the mind-based technology that points one in the direction of guidance and source. So take it away.
Well, Rob, again, always a pleasure to talk with you and share ideas, and again, everybody listening in. So one of the things I did was I worked with my second physicist 2006, 2007. Core resonance was born out of that, and core resonance is a neurofeedback-based technology, and I really ran with that from, say, 2006, 2007 to 2022. And the last article I wrote, in other words, I kept going up and up and up, and I kept taking the whole thing farther because that's what was personally going on with me. And I wrote an article called States of Being as Feeling, which basically what we were doing, what I was doing was I was identifying the state that we're in as we move up the map of consciousness, as we move up in our own consciousness, we carry these different states with us. And elation is one of my favorites. A few days ago, I drove to Prescott. I drove to Costco in Prescott. It was a glorious day, and I had this underlying feeling of joy that was just clear. It was clear inside me. I could feel joy very specifically. It's not anything that I drive. And so I wrote that article, States of Feeling, States of Being as Feeling. And there was actually a half other article I never actually wrote. But what I felt like is I topped out with core resonance. And I don't have an audience for core resonance. This is all work that I've developed and this and that. And what I did was I reset core resonance back to Visionaries Lab, because I wanted to go digital, and I wanted to do digital offerings. Like, this is all the work we're doing is digital. And so I went back to my roots, which was Visionaries Lab, which I was Visionaries Lab before it was Core Resonance. And I revamped my earlier technologies, which are all mind-based, because I am a product of affirmations and goal setting and all that. And I'm retired by 30 with a 40-foot sailboat and all that, no family money, and on. I've told the story numerous times. And so what I decided to do, along with what the process of where I was in my learning curve, was to go back to mind-based and affirmations. And so out of that came Soaring Affirmations, Prosperity, and Guidance Light. And by the way, Guidance Light is a little bit different from the kind of guidance that becomes available with core resonance. And so what I've come to understand is what I really offer is access to guidance, because as you quiet the nervous system, quiet the mind, plug into what's true, as you plug into source or innate intelligence, whatever you want to call it, one of the things that absolutely becomes available is guidance. And guidance, in our earlier conversation this morning, we were talking about governance. And so governance comes to us as guidance. And so the technology that we're talking about, Soaring Affirmations, Prosperity, and Guidance Light, is what I've really done is I've taken the concept of the mind, which is generally pretty unruly. Most of us really, I won't say most of us, that's not even remotely a fair statement. But we've all come to learn have the amount of dominion over the mind we have. And successful business people, they've learned how to, get up in the morning and put their tie on and go to work every day, and they do what they do, and they do what they do, and then you make money, and sometimes you invest it well. And so a lot of people make it through life. But the bottom line is harnessing the mind is the beginning of that process. But what we really want to do is learn how to control what the mind broadcasts. And so a lot of people have a lot of different kinds of dissonance and a lot of kind of disorder. And so what they broadcast out into the world, out into the world of God, if you will, is kind of dissonant thinking. And so as we learn how to have authority over the mind, because we're not our mind, we're not our body, we're not our brain, we're actually awareness. But as we learn how to have authority over the mind, we can control, not the best term, but we can influence, powerfully influence the broadcast that comes out of us. So what Soaring Affirmations, Prosperity and Guidance Light is about is a mechanism by which we saturate the mind with a specific type of affirmation, which of all things is about our connection with Source. So our broadcast becomes about our connection with Source, and we've now have dominion over what we broadcast. And then you add law of attraction to that. So what you focus on expands. What you broadcast is what you receive back. And so I've come up with a relatively simple way to access the frequency of God. Now I will say there is a tiny shortcoming in this, and that's because it's a mind-based technology that has certain limitations. Because we're not really moving away from the mind in its entirety. We're actually using it as a tool, and that's why I refer to it as guidance light. But it is far more than most anybody can achieve on their own. And so harnessing the mind by saturating the mind with a certain type of affirmation, which then gets into soaring affirmations and on, is a very powerful technology. And because it can be delivered in a digital manner, that's why I've backed off and moved back to the foundation of my work, which revolved around affirmations and this and that. And I've kicked that whole thing way up. And the scale of order that can become available by just learning how to manage the mind in a really proper manner is huge.
Over the years, talking to different people at, growth and transformation events, I think most anybody who's been involved for any length of time has been exposed to and used affirmations on some level. And I would say a majority of the folks that I've talked to either had mixed results or no results from their efforts in that arena. Why is that the case, Jim?
That's a great question, Rob. It's an important question. So one of the things I say in Visionaries Thrive in All Times, and I do highly recommend that book. There's three ways we create realities. One, by simply resistance to what we don't want, because resistance is actually powerful focus. And then you add an emotional component. It can be really powerful, but the problem is it creates exactly what you don't want. Resistance brings you exactly what you don't want. Because nobody wants, with rare exception, the hate and the anger and the stuff that resistance brings, because it brings you more of what you're already got. And most people would, especially as you wise up a little bit, you want to learn how to let go of what you don't want. But so resistance to what you don't want is one of the ways we create reality. The second way is choosing what we want based on what we don't want. Most affirmations have a foundation of escaping what we don't want. And they're thereby you're sending out a mixed signal to the universe or the frequency of God or whatever you want to call it, because our prayer, which is whatever comes out of us, our affirmation, our focus, it's all the same. If it's in conflict with itself, you're going to get mixed results. And mixed results often means no results. So visionary mode is the third type of reality creating, and that's where guidance light kicks in, is that we've learned how to move away from escaping what we don't want. And even in our infancy of visionary mode, we're starting to look at the world differently. And frankly, what we want to do is look at the world truer. And if we want to look at the world truer, we're going to look at it in relationship to our connection with Source. And so visionary mode can be about the business you want to build, but it has nothing to do with what you want to escape. And so I think maybe you and I, or maybe an earlier conversation today, when we want what we want, we look to see if the universe gets behind us and kind of fills our wings. In other words, you can want what you want, and if the universe isn't behind it, this was a conversation last night. If what you want in your business plan or your ideal life or your ideal, the next thing you want to do, if you can wait to see if the universe supports it, and if it doesn't, you're kind of, you'll spend a lot of time on something that will take a lot of effort. And visionary mode is quite different. Visionary mode is, it's kind of pure thought. It's kind of intuitive based, and it's magical, and it brings you the most fun, the most excitement, the most possibility. And so harnessing that third variation of reality creating, for which the universe becomes a component. And in fact, focus, even if it's pure focus or visionary focus, is still limited because the bandwidth of focus is limited, because it's coming from your mind as focus, and the bandwidth is kind of minimal. But when you move to intention versus focus, you've moved to a broader bandwidth for which innate intelligence can more readily contribute to what you're working on. Because it's not unusual to have ideas, and by the time you get to the end result of that idea, it's actually vastly different. But that's the stepping stones of making choices and seeing if allowing brings you even more and even better, because that's kind of the science of the whole thing. You decide what you want, again, preferably not based on what you don't want, but you decide what you want and you try it out and you see how the universe supports it, and you allow. And like, I'm big on having a perspective on what I want, and I might hold that decision or that choice for a couple of weeks, and it will morph and become something else, and I will make a new decision based on, because I knew what the last choice point was, and in allowing, that choice point becomes something new. And as I allow that choice point, I will make a new choice or a new decision in the growing of something. And what ends up is often very different from where I started, but generally it has that initial visionary mode, that initial clear point of creation for which it refines itself, and allowing is a big part of that.
Oh, what's the cost of soaring affirmations, abundance, and guidance light? And if someone would like to embrace that proven technology, how do they go about it?
Is this for you, or is this for everybody else, Rob? All right. All right. So first off, prosperity and soaring affirmations, prosperity and guidance light has 100% money back guarantee, which should make it like $15,000 or something, but it's actually $600. And it can be done in three payments. And it's meant to be 100 days of writing a certain type of affirmation, for which you then add a meditation, for which you then add a revision of the affirmation, and that's what becomes a soaring affirmation. And I will say that the stuff that comes out of you is unbelievable. So that's what I set up, is an environment where we learn how to saturate the mind with a certain type of affirmation. We move to a meditation portion. And when that affirmation is revised through our meditation, it becomes what's called a soaring affirmation. And there are things inside of you you never knew were there. And that's what we're doing, is tapping that. And then things start to get interesting.
So my dentist just charged me $1,500 for a crown. And you're telling me for $600, I could learn a technology that has been proven to work in the world of affirmations that would ultimately lead me to the only source that ultimately is going to address any of the things I currently identify as problems? $600?
So that's, so, you know, the way you put it that way, it's embarrassing. I need to bump my prices way, way. Seriously. How would ever somebody ever take you serious at $600? Truthfully, right? We can, you know, that you can work with different clientele. And, you know, ultimately what I'm after is a client base that I'm effective with that refers me to other clients, because it's all word of mouth. And it's great helping people that have a hard time helping themselves. And in fact, one of the conversations I want to have with you at some point is we want to talk about different octaves of different types of clients and different types of interest, and have different tools for entrepreneurs, and different tools or different presentations for different, you know, Tony Robbins probably charges $25,000 for some of his stuff, and he gets a very, very, very alert and attentive audience at those kind
he
of
charges,
fees.
$1 million a year, and 10% of your, I don't know if it's your net or your gross, to counsel business clients, and he's got a waiting list.
And so my point is $600 won't last, because it actually won't last, because you just brought it out in a way where I'm treating the thing as a struggle, and you know, I was telling a story just today. You know, I was a yacht broker for many years, and I sold expensive sailboats. I didn't sell anything less than about 32 feet in general, 32 to about 55. I had a guy came in one day, and he wrote a check for $147,000 for a CNC 41. This is quite a long time ago. That same boat now would be 450. But he wrote a check like that without, he didn't have to write it once or twice. His hand wasn't shaking. He just wrote a check for him. Just flourish. He's used to writing big checks like that. And the fact of the matter is, as a yacht broker or any of these kinds of business, when you work with people that are used to spending money and used to, frankly, the more you spend, the more you expect. And those people shop for who they can spend their money with. As a yacht broker, that's what I felt like. People were shopping for who they wanted to spend their money with as much as what they wanted to buy. Because not only do they write the check, then all the things that have to happen after that have to be pulled off. So they shop for not only what they want, but who they want to buy it from. I'm not making light of the $600 thing, but the truth is, it's vastly, seriously underestimated in its value. And I would encourage people to, and I'm not, this is not a sales pitch. I'm actually being really frank, that to be influential in the world, you need to go where influence is, and then refine people's influence. Because frankly, there's a need to make the world a better place. You can say we have forever, and actually on one hand we do, and there's no disorder. None of this is in disorder. But the fact of the matter is, we're on the edge of turning our planet into a crispy, crispy tortilla. We're on the edge. The animals are fading away, and our oceans are reaching a point of no return, and our temperatures in our oceans. And we need to ground the frequency of God into the world. We need to do it right about now. Right about now. And we can sit there mamby-pamby around, but if the humans don't pay any attention, and soon, and luckily there's exponential multipliers and all of that, but if we don't pay attention, everybody in Miami is going to be ankle deep in water in no time. And that's very, very, very real. And I don't think people get that. So I'm not, so there's 100% money back guarantee on soaring affirmations, prosperity and guidance light. I love working with people. I want to be effective. I want to be efficient. I also want to make a difference in the world. And I'll leave it at that.
How would someone contact you who wants to buy this program and get started?
Yeah, so it does have 100% money back guarantee. The website would be coreresonance.com / soaring affirmations with a hyphen. And that would get you to the page to introduce you to it. You can also contact me at coreresonance.com/contact, for which there is access to email addresses. There's a phone number, though it does go to voicemail. And you can also go to a Google, a Zoom calendar and set up a half hour appointment with me. All of that's free. And what I really want to do is talk to people. But I will have to say that I am relatively serious about what I got in mind, because I'm not just monkeying around. My stuff isn't kind of half-ass based or this or that. And there's a need in the world to start paying attention. And paying attention is about our connection with source. Anything less, anything else, I don't think there's anything else that's effective. If we don't learn how to enable our connection with source, become partnered with source, become exponentially partnered, exponentially contributive by our partnership with source, we're toast as a species. And underneath everything I do is a recognition that if the planet doesn't become heaven on earth at some soon point, we're going to learn the hard way. So go to my website and sign up. 100% money back guarantee. There is no loss. There is no loss, no expense. Just magic.
This is your lucky day. For whatever reason, you have decided to listen to a conversation between yours truly, Rob Christie, a guy who's been involved in personal growth and transformation for decades, and my dear friend Jim Hamilton. One of the best teachers that I have ever had the privilege of encountering. And we have some ideas we want to share with you today. A year or so ago, I took a course from a gal named Marissa Murgatroyd. I'm fairly certain that's not a real last name, but that's immaterial. Her area of expertise is supporting people who want to create their own course online. And one day, she had occasion to share, like most people who have a significant online presence, there are tiers of involvement. And you start usually at the bottom, where you're purchasing some pre-recorded material. That's price level number one. Then price level number two, you get the pre-recorded material, and you get access not to Marissa directly, but one of her someone she's trained and has worked with her for a while. And then if you go all the way, you know, to the top, you know, Marissa's like $3,000 an hour if you want to get her personal one-on-one attention. Now, I was thinking about that this morning with respect to my friend Jim and the people he interacts with. And the subject of entrepreneurs came up. And if nothing else, you know, successful entrepreneurs have figured out a way to make money somehow, some way. And I'm wondering, Jim, specifically, you know, how your work is beneficial to an entrepreneur.
Great, great question, Rob. And I appreciate always our conversations. And I really enjoy as well the opportunity for people to listen in and at less than a $3,000 an hour rate. Entrepreneurs are kind of a class of people that have learned the fundamentals of harnessing the mind, you might say, and goal setting and affirmations and the many variants on that have become how they operate. And they've learned how to manage their time, and they've learned how to manage their money, and they've learned some of the fundamentals of being in life on planet Earth, and they pay their taxes or they don't, and they have their Cadillacs or their Lexuses or their Ferraris, and they've become influential. Now, the question is, have they become usefully influential? And I'm not going to make anybody wrong, but there comes a level of success where you start having diminishing returns. And that's kind of what goes on. And that's part of the success story is, especially in the, you know, we're in the 2020s here, 2023 or something like that. And there's so much going on that didn't go on in the 70s and the 80s. And also, we make choices and we see the results of our choices much faster than we used to. And so the idea of success and what success is has really evolved lately, the last 15, 20 years. And even since the COVID deal, the three-year COVID. Anyway, and if nothing else, I see people as more generous with each other since COVID, since this, whatever it was. And I think the entrepreneurial world has become, because entrepreneurs are powerful. They have at their beck and call things that most of us haven't had much experience with. And so the entrepreneur is kind of your leader in a certain manner of speaking in the business environment. And I think slowly but surely, they're more and more discovering the importance of being green because of all kinds of things. And ultimately my aim is to take a certain class of people that is influential and refine their influence. And to me, there's no doubt that our connection with Source. First off, I mean, what's this thing about Source? The idea that we're here on our own and we're just rolling around on a ball and it just goes around and goes around and moon goes around that ball and the moon and the earth roll go around a ball that's the sun and it all just kind of happens. There's an order that everything shares. And I think that successful business, and it's more true for younger people and younger entrepreneurs, that there's a bigger game going on. And that bigger game ultimately means the amount of influence we have is how much influence we have. And when we start to look at our influence from a top-down model, we inadvertently always become leaders of some sort or another. And I look at it from Like when a boat goes through the water, it leaves a wake behind it. And I used to be in marinas and the dinghies in the morning when you're sleeping on your boat. I had a 40-foot sailboat for 8 years, and I was in a marina in Key Largo. And the dinghies would go by early in the morning. They would go by slow, and the wake, you could hear it tap the hull of your boat. And it was kind of a restful, but when an inflatable goes through the marina fast, it leaves a lot of waves behind it and a lot of noise and a lot of disruption. And that's what we're learning the difference is how to go into the world and contribute to the world and leave it better than we found it. I even wrote under the title once, Leaving a Trail of Leadership. It's all the same idea. And so entrepreneurs, first off, they already have it within them to want to be successful, and they've learned fundamental concepts of being successful, i.e., harnessing the mind, harnessing patterns and habits, managing time, and this and that. But ultimately, the biggest success is learning how to partner with innate intelligence for making your choices and the direction you take as an entrepreneur, because ultimately we are all influential. We all leave, even if you create a lot of disturbance, you're influential. It's not very usefully influential. And so entrepreneurs are a crowd of people and a caliber of people that already are influential. They're certainly influential in their own lives. And there's a couple of companies, here where I am, where the restaurant people, they go out of their way. They pay their employees like 25% more than some of the other companies. And they actually take care of their employees, because we all know now that employees are hard to hold or get and hold and keep a hold of, after the COVID thing and the government paying people money to stay home. So we're learning slowly but surely how to take care of each other better and have a living wage, and on and on and on and on. And the entrepreneur is one of the cutting edges of that. When you take an entrepreneur and add a spiritual component, and I'm not talking about a religious, and I'm not saying religious component and entrepreneurial doesn't go together, because it can, because a lot of people that are religious can have that same kind of, we just use different words, different terminology, but the entrepreneurs are really important of society, and there's a leadership role that entrepreneurs deliver, and the more efficient they become at being leaders and entrepreneurs and starting to partner with innate intelligence as an entrepreneur, we can bump the game up, way up.
I want to make two quick comments before I ask my next question. First, as I'm an MBA, I had a significant business career. And during that career, I had occasion to meet quite a number of successful entrepreneurs. And a pattern I observed, it wasn't universal, but it happened often enough that I noticed it. A guy or gal would have their success in business, acquire the big house, acquire the expensive cars, acquire the yacht, set up trust funds for those they loved. And then at a certain point, they started looking around and saying, well, what's next? And the answer was some kind of service, to others, however that showed up for me. That's comment number one. Comment number two, in our conversations, we spent a lot of time on the map of consciousness. And Jim can direct you to the conversations that go into that in greater detail. I just want to focus in on one point that you made, and that is that people toward the high end of the map have a staggering ability to affect other people and the planet. I don't remember the numbers exactly, but something on the order of, one enlightened soul can offset the negative effects of several million. I mean, that's staggering. So how does your work support an entrepreneur in melding together the concept of service and his or her ascension on the map of consciousness, so they can have that kind of staggering impact at a time where you eloquently describe us as being right on the edge as a species.
A great, great remark.
You'd look like Beetle Bailey after Sarge got a hold of him.
Our back and forth is always
really worthy.
And he actually
blew his
knees
out.
And by the way, he was kind of raised by gangsters,
so he's always very well Italian.
He was always very,
so success becomes a number of different things. And your entrepreneur,
he blew his knees out. He spent 7 years in a cave.
Car salesman.
Is a bit of an entrepreneur because they're quite
this and that. But there comes a
what
point.
The story I'm trying to tell is that
he had the penthouse
you
suite.
Start to look at, well,
Frankfurt,
now that I've gotten to the top of the stack here, at the top
Germany,
of the pile, what do I really
the BMW building,
and
he had a healing center up
so
there.
Once you
he
have
had
dominion over your affairs at some
very
degree
high
or another,
clients, you would take the hour.
It's not that unusual
there,
for
so
people
to
start looking at
the
in
spiritual.
But one of the things
of
he taught
life,
me
because it's actually right
was
there.
That
and
as an employer,
you don't really have an option.
What you do is you teach your people,
of course you do,
to be
you
the
can
best
spend
they
the rest
can
of your
be,
life
even to the
chasing
point
the best
that they leave
tequila on
your
the planet
company
or the best
and
cocaine
start
or
their
the best
own.
this or that. And
you don't
there's
diminish
always
your
that.
employees. You
And
don't
actually,
hold them
people
back.
do that
And what
too.
he pointed
And they
out
outgrow
was
those
the next
things. And
thing you have,
eventually,
you're as a
the
high-end
spiritual component
quality
of our life,
entrepreneur,
the people
you
that are
teach
paying
the people
attention
under
becomes
you let
evident.
them, I won't
And
say
while
exceed
some
you, but
people
yeah, you
might
let them
take
grow.
that and what they do is they start their own
serious
organization,
or in
and
a
it
certain kind of
becomes like a
rigidity
tree as
and
part of
put their
yours.
business aside. And of
They
course,
don't
all
go
that's
and try
just
to cut
fine.
your throat. They you
But
let
when you
them
learn how
grow
to
and you let them become what
combine
they can
your
be, and they don't separate
spirituality
from your
and your
company, and they do
business
something else, and they become like
acumen
a brother company
and
to
your
yours. Or
influence.
the idea
And again, I'm
is
not talking about
that this whole
proselytizing. That's a
thing
word
of
I don't really
growth and
know,
success
but
can be something entirely
it's
different than what we
becoming
think of it.
more of
And so
what
if
you
we
can
treat our
become
employees right and our
is the
people right and
game.
let them
And
even
as we learn how
exceed our
to
organization and
extend
start their own,
our
because of the
spirituality
camaraderie,
into our
it becomes
business
a,
world, we become more
I start to use the
influential.
word
And I'll
brotherhood,
give
but
you a side
note
maybe
real
that's not
quick, so
right. A
far
buddy,
off.
and that's what we need to learn
He
how to
writes
do.
16th century
And
poetry, and he
so the
was a
entrepreneur world
world-class
is
martial
the
arts
cutting
guy.
edge. It's
And he's not somebody you'd walk, he had long hair.
where
He's
the
not
really
somebody you'd
useful
walk up to
influence
and poke him in the chest
becomes
and tell him this
available
or that.
at the same time of having the money and having the success. We start developing our spiritual success. And core resonance, for example, we can bump people up the map of consciousness very quickly because we can rapidly quell internal resistance and internal overload. So resistance and consciousness are inverse. So as resistance drops, consciousness grows. And we can bump people towards 700 on the map in a couple of years. And the number you were looking for, one person at 700, typically a very high number on the map of consciousness. One person at 700 counterbalances a negativity of 70 million people below 200. So normally, moving towards seven, most people at the high end are around 450 on the map. Maybe 500 at the very most. More, 350 to 450 is where most people fall. One person at 500 counterbalances a negativity of 750,000. But because we can rapidly quell resistance by quieting the nervous system through core resonance, which is a variation on neurofeedback, it's not traditional at all. Because we can quell resistance, we can rapidly move people up the map. And technically, a colony is six people sharing the ownership of core resonance. And we can take a group of six, all six of them, towards 700 on the map. Well, I'd say well inside of 2 years. That becomes a massive portal for innate intelligence expressing into the dimension of humanity and grounding the frequency of God or grounding coherence into the world. And that's ultimately what entrepreneurs, that's what they're charged with doing, is making the world a better place. Because how can they can continue in their business if everything is toast? So to preserve their sales and preserve their organization, we need to save the planet so we can continue driving the show.
I want to talk about, two different people that come to you and say, I'm interested in your work. The ones, let's call them, normal Joe, not a bad guy, not a good guy, had some successes, had some failures, but in terms of self-discipline and success. He's kind of at square one. That's individual number one. Individual number two, he's a successful entrepreneur. He's mastered self-discipline. He's got a certain amount of control over his mind. He's made some money. He's created a successful organization. I find it mind-boggling contemplating how quickly that entrepreneur can begin to move up the map of consciousness and have a greater effect on his existing organization, a greater effect on his employees, a greater effect on his clients by embracing your work. And I'm hoping that we have a couple of those guys or gals listening this morning. Your thoughts, sir?
So, you know, as a yacht broker, and I sold boats, I was in the industry for about 14 years. I had my 39 during that period. And what I came to learn, because sometimes we do boat shows and the people were just thronging through the show, and we did in the water shows. So I sold strictly sailboats again. I sold a Freedom. I think I might have sold. I've sold boats as small as 28, but generally 32 to 55 or so. And what I eventually learned was to look for buyers. I talked to everybody, but instead of trying to sell a boat to everybody, I talked to everybody, but I looked for buyers. And my whole life, I talk to everybody and I look for interesting conversations. I don't try to convince people that the weather is good if they want to go rah, rah, rah. I look for people that are interesting to talk to. And so in this remark you make about you got people kind of at the beginning point and you got people that are more evolved, I don't make less of somebody that is quote unquote at the starting gate, because everybody has the same possibility. It does take courage when you're at the lower end of the scale. It takes more balls. It takes more wherewithal to break free, because the entrepreneur has already achieved that. But there is no difference, because everybody has the same potential. And that is one of the beauties of the whole thing, is everybody has the same potential. So you don't ever diss people. But obviously some people are easier to work with. The guy at the road check for the CNC 41, Alan Bakowitz. What a neat guy. His girlfriend was neat. They were out of Chicago. He had two Ferraris, as laid back as they ever get. Wrote a check for 100. And then he painted the boat black, named it Fever, and did a lot of different things to it. I handled all that for him. But some people are driven to have more. And just because they already have achieved the having more, in fact, I'll tell you what the truth is. Somebody at the beginning gate and somebody three quarters of the way through the gate, they've already got a Ferrari or two. I'm not sure which would be the easier to work with. I know the one that's just going through the gate, it's hard to charge him a big chunk of change. But you see, in some respects, the more you pay, the more you pay attention. When you're giving something away, like everybody knows, if you don't charge for stuff, people don't take it seriously. I think the $600 deal for Soaring Affirmations, Prospering Guidance Light will be toast before very long. It's actually probably wrong to not charge a decent amount of money for it. But my point is that some people, they just come into the planet driven to be more. And my job is to look out for those people. Again, whether they're three quarters out the gate and they've got deposit on their first Ferrari. By the way, when you order Ferraris, you don't know what color you're going to get. You don't know if you're getting a convertible, or at least it was back then. You didn't know what all you got was a slot on the assembly line, and you got what you got. That was it. But helping people. So consciousness is about
First off, it's about connection with source. And everybody else has connection with source. And I suppose the more active their connection with source is more of a contributor to the camaraderie we have among each other. So my better conversations are, you might say, are people that are more plugged into what's true and they've already evolved a certain amount, but you cannot discount people that are at the gate just getting started. And my job is just as much to look out for those guys. But I will tell you, my work has never been for the masses. There has to be a certain level of contribution on their part. And for me to drop my material so far down to make it available to everybody, that's just not my deal. It's just not my deal. So you got to be paying a certain amount of attention. That's really the bottom line. If you're not paying that much attention, I'm not going to simply take my stuff, drop it down too much. You got to be able to play. You got to be willing to play and got to be willing to step up and got to be able to go raise your hand and say, I really want to learn this stuff.